Well, we are gathered together in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God who has come in flesh. And because we are getting such a late start today, I'm going to give you a very brief teaching tonight. But probably be longer than most places that you might go to hear teaching. Let's, to begin with, you can, if you want to, turn in your copy of the Scriptures to Genesis chapter 19. I'm going to quote from our translated literal majority translation, but you may want to compare it with yours. And then we will be going to Isaiah 63. And if I'm just saying this because I will probably forget when this is done, but if I can give this digital recorder either to Bruce or to Zoe, and you can get this, whatever you do, so that it gets on the internet, onto the website. Has anybody gone to the website recently?
Not this week.
Has anybody gone to the website and gone to the doctrinal statement recently? No. I don't know what happened, but at given words in the doctrinal statement, like the Lord is a single person, but having dual essences. And the word single is highlighted. And if you click on it, it takes you to Anastasia.com or something where you can get mail order brides from Russia. And there'll be another word that... Scott's laughing. Did you do this?
I'm not laughing.
I know, you're not. You're smiling. Like everybody else is. But then if you click on something else that's highlighted, you'll get a free credit report.
It seems to be more and more of a disturbing trend.
Really?
With internet.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I've noticed such things as well. And it's like there seems to be a little bit of obedience to a moral standard. Doesn't see much.
It looks like, they just hijacked our website and put, I don't know anything about it. I just know it has to stop. Yeah. Anyway, what did that, why was I there? I'm telling you guys to do whatever hocus pocus you do to get this to happen. And you put it on there. I'm like right on the precipice, just with a little persuasion is all I need to be decisive as to what book we will begin this next Friday. And I think I'm almost there. And so there's no subliminal messages or anything that will make any difference, or blatant ones.
I read the whole thing today.
Great. You guys know that all of these little things that you're saying before the teaching formally starts are all on this recording, right? Okay.
This is God.
Thanks.
I didn't realize you were
recording yet. Here we go. We're going to look today at Old Testament mercy. And not chesed. I'm translating that as loving kindness. We spent a long time with that, not so long ago, on Wednesday nights. The word that I am going to translate mercy, though, we're going to look at that word tonight. Not anywhere close to all of its uses, just a few. And as I said, because of the lateness of the hour, my troubles making it difficult for me to get here that I explained before we turned the device on. We'll make this rather brief tonight, but we're going to look at the words chemla, that's a noun, and chamal, that's a verb. One is what we're going to translate mercy, and the other is what we will translate show mercy. So the one's the noun, the other's the verb. In Genesis 19, remember this is the chapter where, and we're looking at God's mercy too, not mercy of man to man here, but while there's very much of a connection between them, we're just looking at God's mercy to man. In Genesis 19, two angels have visited Lot. And they're visiting Lot to extricate him from Sodom, knowing probably that he won't leave on his own accord. But he doesn't even know that there's anything going down here. Abraham does. He's just found out, like the day before, or that day, depending on how long the events took. Well, this we can say it's into the next day, at the point where we're going to be looking at this from the time that God revealed what he was going to do with Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, Zeboim, and Bela, which would become Zoar. He's being told now, at this point in time, Lot knows, we've been sent to destroy this city. And Yahweh is going to rain down fire and sulfur from Yahweh, that is, subject-object relationship within the persons of the Trinity. And Lot is maybe thinking, I don't know, like what's right in front of me as I can see into the kitchen there, home sweet home. This is not sweet, but maybe Lot, I don't know, maybe Lot thinks it is. He's not getting out of there fast enough. They're telling him about it. They're telling, hurry up. He's lingering, as one version will put it. And that is in our verse. And it says, and he delayed. And the men, at this point, they're angels. And Lot knows it by now because they have stricken the homosexual horde at the door of Lot's house with Amalrosis. And yet they're still in the form of men, and they still have some kind of physicality, at least temporarily, that they're utilizing to get this assignment done. And it says, the men grabbed at his hand, and at the hand of his wife, and at the hands of his two daughters, in the mercy of Yahweh upon him. And they made him exit, and made him settle outside the city. You don't seem to be taking this seriously enough. You don't seem to understand. Grab these people and, like, escort them out of here. This action was in the mercy of Yahweh. Then I've mentioned to you Isaiah 63. That's where we're going now. Isaiah 63 and verse 9. This word we've just seen in Genesis is chemla, the noun form of this family. Now, Isaiah 63:9. This is broad. This is not one event now. This is a great deal of, like, Israelite history being summed up from God's merciful perspective. In all their affliction, he was afflicted. And the messenger of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity, he redeemed them, and he bore them and carried them all the days of old. This word that our New King James, I did make the alteration of angel to messenger there, but in the New King James here, this word that is rendered pity is what I'm translating mercy. What was the action of mercy here? It was redemption. Redemption from what? The context doesn't allow us to speak in terms of the redemption that we generally relate to, redemption from sin and into everlasting salvation. But he's talking about all kinds of things. He has redeemed them in all their affliction. He was afflicted. That is, while they were going through various troubles, distresses, a word that would translate as constrictions in Exodus 3 that I was working on before I came here. The Lord felt it, not maybe the same way, in a divine way, to be sure. Wasn't any admixture of any selfishness involved in it. There wasn't any self-pity, which maybe they would have had. There wasn't any negative emotion involved in it that would come from the flesh. God doesn't have such or have capacity to operate in even a sentimental evil. You know, that is, even like in this, like he wouldn't feel maybe their anger toward him or their questioning of his wisdom or his justice or his love. He wouldn't feel necessarily then exactly what they're feeling, but this is sympathy as distinguished from empathy. When I empathize with you, I have feelings that are because you are suffering. It's affecting me. But sympathy is when I suffer. That's the pathy part of the word sum. We're talking about etymology now. Where we get the word sum, pathos, is same feelings. He's recognizing you're having this happen to you. You're going through this. And he may not feel exactly the same way, but he feels compassion. I wouldn't even say that he always feels that. If there's nothing of just, how can we say it? Natural reality. But it's all some evil reaction that makes someone feel badly. He's not feeling that. You understand? Because if all there is fleshly reaction, he doesn't have any fleshly reaction. He doesn't feel sorry for you for being evil. It's just like, hey, stop doing that. And then you won't feel that way anymore. But there's a natural reality. If you throw me in prison and you beat me every day, just the way nature's set up, God set it up this way, those beatings, I feel them. I have nerve endings on my back. If you're beating my back, if you're cutting into my back, it's going to be more intense. I'm feeling it, and that is a natural suffering of reality. And even if the Lord allows us to go through something like that, He's not stoic, stone-hearted, disconnected. He's very much, it matters to Him. He's involved in it. And we may not understand all that goes into His justice, His love, His wisdom, the truth that is behind why I'm in this situation. And that's okay, because we can trust the character of the One who is just, wise, loving, and true. If we don't understand it, that's all right. That's okay. But in that natural reality, he's there. He's very much involved in it. The language of Exodus 3 that I've been translating, we'll read it on the Lord's Day, is powerful. I choose to translate this one word, constriction. I spent the longest time, my wife came in a couple times while I was doing this, probably looks like to her, oh, he's just sleeping in the chair. But to me, I'm awake and I'm like, trying so hard to come up with a word. She comes in 20 minutes later and I'm still fighting with this word, all right? It's a word that means to squeeze, but to squeeze to the point where damage is done. So we have a word like if you had a small decorative vase here, and I took it and I squeezed it with all my might and I crushed it, you would say that I squeezed it. Then you would say that I crushed it. We don't have a word that means both. At least I don't know of one where, like, we would have to say he squeezed it to crushing, or he squeezed it to the point where he crushed it. Like, the squeezing is that, and then the crushing is, okay, the end result here. And this word means, like he says in that, he's seen and he knows about all of the crushing pressure that was squeezing in, you know, like from all sides. You know, like when if you could be in the hollow here of my fist, and I could go like that, you know, you'd be like all sides would be coming in on you. And I finally settled with constriction. You know, what does a boa constrictor do? He wraps around you and then he squeezes from all sides like that. That's constriction. And so I've seen all of the constriction with which the Egyptians constrict you. Usually this word's used not of literal squeezing. It's usually something like affliction of some kind, pressure. So the Lord saw it. The Lord knew it. And that's part of the history of Israel that he's talking about here in Isaiah, where in all their affliction, he was afflicted. And the messenger angel of his presence, not an angel here, saved them. In his love and in his mercy, he redeemed them. And after he redeemed them, he bore them and carried them all the days of old. See, all the days of old, all of what we're talking about here, these things that we read about wherein God came to the rescue, and it was a mercy. So, being redeemed out of affliction is a mercy that God does for us. This is lovely. Let's look at chemal. That's the verb form of this word family. So to show mercy. To Joel 2 and verse 18, please. Joel 2, 18. Then Yahweh will be zealous for his land and pity his people. Pity is the word here. He will show mercy to or upon his people. And at once, in another of the prophet's writings, that is two times in one verse, Malachi chapter 3. And verse 17, Malachi 3:17. I thought to mention this when we were in our having our child training seminar not too long ago, because it talks about the normal disposition of fathers. 3:17. They shall be mine, says Yahweh of hosts. Those are those who, in verse 16, have feared Yahweh, spoke with one another, got together and talked about Yahweh together. They shall be mine, says Yahweh of hosts, on the day that I make them my jewels. And I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. Spare and spares is the word. That means fathers that are right don't want to discipline their children. They have to at times. Sometimes they have to make it sting. But only because they love them. Not because they're angry, not because they're frustrated, not because they're reactionary. They have to do that. But even when they have to do that, they don't want to do that. And they wish that the event or the disposition or whatever they're dealing with never happened. It grieves them that their children were like that. And it grieves them to have to do anything. But a lot of times, I am one, and I'm done doing a lot of that. But I'm still in the set of people called fathers. A lot of times we just let kids get away with stuff because we have mercy on them, and that is what God is saying He's going to be like. And He likens it to what fathers are like. We're talking about fathers that have some in with natural affection, you understand. We're not talking about, all fathers are like this. The deeper you get into the last days, the more and more, without storge, without familial affection, will be prominent in the list of negative character traits that characterize humanity without natural affection. In other words, this is natural. He's appealing to it. He's saying, this is what fathers are like. Deeper you go, less fathers you'll see like this. You'll see more fathers that take pleasure in inflicting and exacting punishment upon their children. That's not at all how God designed fatherhood. But God recognizes this is what fathers do. Mm-hmm. And God is like that. He's going to, I think you're seeing the word spare. Mm-hmm. I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. We don't even have to be talking about, some sin. Paul says, I would spare you, when he speaks to those who would want to get married. He said, you will have trouble in the flesh, and I would spare you. Like, does anybody listen to Paul? Not really on this. I don't see too many people listen to that. The urge to marry, the desire to marry, is so strong within most human beings. And if you get married, Paul will be the first to say, you have not sinned. We're not finding anything wrong with it. Not saying there's anything wrong with wanting to be married. But he said, I'm just telling you ahead of time, you're going to have difficulties in the flesh. You're going to have trouble in the flesh. couple of you, a few of you aren't married here. And you know probably more right now about how to have a good marriage than the people who are married here. These idiots are just flubbing it all up. And you don't have any experience, but, you know, it's like, I'm sure you have all the answers. That's how people are before they have children. They just have all the answers. They just know, well, you know, we're going to raise our kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, right? And they quote over, and it's just like, they just know how it's all going to turn out, and they're going to have, you know, as the child grows, when they're about four, you start to see a little glimmer behind their head, and as time goes on, that halo just widens and glows more and more, because you just know how you're going to do that. Anyway, we'll tell you, if those of us who are married, will tell you, I don't even know why. It just seems like I do trouble. And I remember listening to this guy. I may have told you this situation before. I wasn't married, and there was a man, when I was at Bethany Baptist Church, we didn't have a pastor for a long period of time. And so they would have a different speaker come in every week. Deacon Adams was the guy that would line up the speakers every week. And he had to get a guy for Sunday morning and Sunday night. Sometimes they were different people. Usually they were the same person. And then Wednesdays, well, we're just going to have to fill that in ourselves. And Walt would speak sometimes, and sometimes somebody else would speak. Anyway, I don't know what this brother's name was. I couldn't find him if my life depended on it. I don't have any recollection. But I just remember he had this green suit on with these very wide lapels on the suit. And he was talking about trouble and tribulation. And he was saying, if you don't have any trouble, probably it's because you're not that much of a threat to Satan. And I thought about myself, I thought, I don't have any trouble. Maybe I'm not too much of a threat for Satan. A couple years later, I said, I do. Somebody else said it back to me. Trouble. Everywhere. I mean, just like, as soon as I got married. Paul says, I would spare you. That's not sin to get married, but he could say, I could spare you from this. If you just kind of, just, I don't even care if you don't listen to me. Just give me an honest hearing. I want to spare my children things that aren't sin. I want them to sin. I mean, I would spare you what you're going to get because you sin, the punishment you get. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about that too. But I would spare you having to find out the hard way about doing this. Or I would spare you being a sucker for certain financial, you know, the millennium ahead of time, your problems. I would spare you that. Maybe I've done those things before. And I can say, oh, don't do that. I would just, why would I want any Christian to have any trouble? I don't want you to have troubles. I would spare you that. If you're my son or my daughter, I would spare you that. Oh, you're getting ready to do that. Wait a minute. Let me tell you about when your mother and I did that. So that hopefully they don't do it. I would spare you. I would just spare you. Fathers just don't want to see their kids have bad times. God doesn't want his kids to have bad times. He said, I'm like this in as far as fathers. Now, if he does give you a word, or if he changes circumstances so that you don't go through those things, he's shown mercy to you. Things could be so much worse. I went to see a movie with my wife recently. It was this movie in the theaters that's out now, Lincoln. You know? Mm-hmm. And what was I going to tell you? No, nothing about them. Probably anyway. I don't know. Mercy. God will spare. Yeah, you're right. You're right, too. No.
He told the people that were going to watch the movie not to watch because he was sparing the mercy.
No. Well, never mind. I still prefer this over writing out sermons, you know? These are some of the pitfalls of not writing everything out. How much worse things can be. Yes, Rachel. Yes. Exactly. At the beginning of the movie, there was an advertisement. You know, you have to sit through 25 minutes of trailers. Whatever time the movie starts, Joan and I like to go 20 minutes later than the time they tell you. But there was an advertisement that came on right before the movie, and it said, if your children, I don't know, it had like three different situations, but like if your children can breathe without a mask, thank God. And there was a kid there who had some kind of disease that they had this mask over their face all the time. It was, and they kept going from one thing to another, all right? If your child can run, and it showed a child who had one leg and was on some prosthetic provision for him, for her. And this could be worse, right? Like, whatever your situation is, you know, just be thankful. This could be worse. We would spare anybody. It was for St. Jude's Hospital, which never, you know, charges anybody or anything. This could be worse. I would spare you mercy. If we're spared anything that could be worse, and if you just start thinking about the things that could be worse, we've been spared like thousands of things. Just thousands. We could make a list here and count your negative blessings. This didn't happen. This doesn't happen. I don't have that situation. That's a mercy. That's a mercy. All right, so when we get into things that we didn't want to happen, God only gives us these if He loves us. Everything He does out of these two things, love and mercy, that are talked about in our verse. He's such a good God to His elect, to His children. Let's look at some places. I want to end with two verses that deal with just sort of broad statements about the clement character of God. We were in Joel before. Let's go back there, though, to Joel 2 again and verse 13. Joel 2:13. Joel 2:13. So rend your heart and not your garments. In other words, don't make an outward, merely outward display of contrition over your sin. Make it inward. Don't tear your clothes. What does that do? Let your heart be torn. Rend your heart and not your garments. Return to Yahweh your God. Here's the reason. For He is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and He relents from doing harm. The other is in Nehemiah 9. Verse 17, we're particularly interested in the B part of the verse, but we'll read the A part to get you there. 9:17. Nehemiah is recording a prayer prayed by Israel in these days. They're kind of recounting the history of Israel, and they say they refuse to obey. and they were not mindful of your wonders that you did among them. But they hardened their necks, and in their rebellion they appointed a leader to return to their bondage. But you are God, ready to pardon, gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abundant in kindness, and did not forsake them. Now this mercy that you see in the Old Covenant Scriptures, there's a whole other side to this that we know about in the New Testament. I mean, it almost made that mercy look like no mercy. When God, so that He could redeem in the way that we are used to thinking of it, took on humanity in the person of the Son, Jesus the Christ, and died, and then made redemption, but also regeneration available in the redemption, the washing of regeneration in the Holy Spirit, and saved us by mercy, both in its, you know, in the willingness to lay down its basis in the death of the Lord Jesus Christ, and then in the merciful application of it to those who would believe. This mercy is sky high. This mercy is beyond the clouds. The mercy of the Father giving and the Son coming as God incarnate, that He might bring us to Himself. This mercy is beyond articulation. It's above verbalization. You cannot put this into words. I can't say it. I can't talk to you enough or saliently enough to drive this home to you. There's got to be a receptor inside you. There's got to be the new life. There's got to be a heart beyond that new life that has responded, that's genuine to the truth of God. And then you respond to that word that's there to begin to grasp it fully, to appreciate it, to measure it to what it's worth. Suffice it to say that this mercy of God is, one, real, and two, toward us, and three, fantastic. The one having ears to be hearing, let him be hearing.